Friday. Tell us about how that trip went. Gotcha. I see. Okay. Gotcha. Okay, 28th of this month. All right, that'll be here before we know it. So Sam's update is that the regular eye doctor is happy. Could we say that? Good. And Eric, do you have an appointment coming up near term with the kidney folks? Couple weeks. Gotcha. Very good. All right. Thank you for letting me tack that on after the prayer. It just slipped my mind beforehand. When last we left the children of Israel in our survey of the Old Testament, which we are going to spend two quarters on to give it kind of the full treatment as best we can. When we last left the children of Israel here, they were leaving Egypt. Yay, they were leaving Egypt. And they were under the leadership of Moses when they miraculously crossed this Red Sea. I cannot imagine, you know, that event. It's in my mind, it's one of the top five, I think. I want to say top five things in the Bible that I would love to have seen with my own eyes. I reckon first on that list would have to be the resurrection of Jesus. Maybe not. I mean, if you have a slightly different list, that's cool with me. But I think the children of Israel crossing the Red Sea miraculously, and then seeing what happened, you know, to the Egyptian army following, I think that would be an incredible thing to see. I'd love to have been able to see that. The children of Israel did see it. Not only did they see it, but they were there. They lived it, man. And they were on a straight course, the children of Israel were, to where? Where were they heading? Where was God sending them? Out of Egypt, across the Red Sea on dry ground, do not pass go, go straight to where? Promised Land. That's the way God planned it out. Only there was quite a substantial detour, which we'll spend a little bit of our time and attention talking about tonight. In Numbers chapter 13, verse 1, Numbers chapter 13, verse 1, the Lord speaks to Moses, and he says, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. Okay, so the children of Israel are finally going to take possession of this land that God has been promising since whom? God has been promising to give these people this land since when? Abraham, Genesis chapter 12. And at long last, they're going to take it. So Moses sends spies into the land. If you dig in and do some of your own reading, you'll find that we have one spy representing each tribe for a grand total of how many spies? 12. And they go into the land under Moses' instruction, under God's direction, and they are told to, you know, check things out. My head's a little stopped up, so if I'm screaming at you, holler at me and make me stop. I don't want to scream at you, but I can't hear anything. These spies are going into the land, and Moses instructs them, take a look at the people in the land. This is Numbers 13, 18. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are there a bunch of them? Not that many of them. You know, we're going in this land to take it over, and this might be some good surveillance for us to have. Take a look at the goods in the land. Verse 19, again, Numbers 13, verse 19. Just kind of do what, you know, what you would kind of expect you would need to do if you're going to go into the land and take it over. So these spies go. Verse 25 tells us how long they were at this job. How many days? 40 days, verse 25. That 40-day period will become significant here in just a second. And so 12 spies, 40 days, they come back, and they brought word to the congregation and showed the fruit of the land, verse 26 says. And they said, we came to the land which you sent us, flows with milk and honey. Who said it would flow with milk and honey? God did. So here come back these 12 spies saying, all right, good news, God was right. Shouldn't be a huge headline that God was right. God always is right. But these folks come back and they confirm the word which was told to them by God. And everyone is hearing what God said is right, what God said is true. That should have instilled some faith in them. You know, wouldn't you think? Wouldn't it be like a boost of confidence to hear somebody say, hey, this is what God says, and this is the way it is, and looky here, God is right. Because there were other things that God said. Like, for example, go into this land and take it. I will be with you. That's something else that God told these folks. But they're trying to split the difference here, and they say God was right when he tells us this is a land of milk and honey. But, verse 28, or however, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and their cities are fortified. At the very end of class tonight, we're going to look at one specific one of those cities that was heavily walled and fortified. So, good news, bad news is there are a lot of people in this land. They're strong, big, strong, you know, football player looking people. And their cities are fortified, very large. Besides this, we saw the descendants of Anak there. I mean, it's as bleak as it can get. So these people are, you know, sabotaging the good news. Beware of what sabotages good news. I sometimes refer to this assembly here in Numbers chapter 13 as a men's business meeting of the children of Israel. You know, you've got what God says to do, right, front and center. God wants us to go into this land and take it. And then you open it up for discussion, comments, input, and they're saying, yeah, but it's not going to work. We can't do it. It costs too much money. It'd be too hard. Don't have enough people to do that. And that's what's going on here, you know. Everyone, you see a big chunk of the fruit from the land that the spies got and brought back. You hear the spies report that the land flows of milk and honey. Man, let's go. Let's do it. And then kind of the doubt, the pessimism, the worry, the analysis paralysis kicks in. And it's pretty clear to a man named Caleb and another man named Joshua that these 10 spies are trying to sabotage this project. And Caleb has heard enough. Verse number 30, Caleb quiets the people before Moses and says, let us go up at once and occupy the land, for we are well able to overcome it. Where do you reckon Caleb got that idea, we can take this land? Yeah, God told him to go into it and take the land. Caleb remembered how they got out of Egypt. Caleb remembered how God took care of them. Pardon me. And so Caleb says, whoa. Sounds like y'all are wanting to give up on God. Let's don't do that. God says we can take it. Therefore, we can take it. And he was a quiet voice of reason and faith in God. But, verse 32, the children of Israel, the other 10 spies, Caleb was not alone. He was joined by Joshua, who we'll meet later. But Caleb and Joshua were outnumbered. And the children of Israel were given an evil report or a bad report, verse 32 says. And guess what won? Guess what happened? You know, this is so typical, isn't it? You say it again? Yeah, well, they're ready to kill him. Yeah, that's one way to hush somebody up, kill him. But, you know, you've got a go-getter on the one hand who says, hey, let's do this. It'll be hard. We'll need some volunteers. You're going to have to do something, you know. It might cost a little bit of money. And then over here, we've got the folks who say, no, let's don't do that. No, now's not a good time for that. Don't want to bite off more than we can chew. That's not going to work. Well, always the people who say, let's don't do anything hard, let's don't do anything different, let's don't do anything challenging or expensive, those people always have the upper hand, right? Because the status quo is very easy to maintain. There are all sorts of sayings about maintaining the status quo. And so the children of Israel, the whole congregation, chapter 14, verse 1, they decided that they would just kind of stay put, which is bizarre. Not only do they decide not to go into the promised land, but check this out. The children of Israel were ready to go back where? Chapter 14, verse 4. They're ready to go back to Egypt. Do you remember how bad things were in Egypt? If you dig a little deeper, and this is not that kind of study, but if you just do kind of an analysis of the children of Israel, you will discover that their memory played tricks on them, you know. And they would often associate Egypt with you know, safety and with happiness and joy. When they were in Egypt, they wanted to get out of Egypt, right? The new Pharaoh, we met him last week or the week before perhaps. The new Pharaoh, who did not know Joseph and did not have any respect for Joseph's family, these folks here, Joseph's family, he made the children of Israel serve with rigor. Remember, famously, after Moses had requested for God's people to be let go, Pharaoh took something away from their brick making. What was that? He took away the straw from their brick making. If you've got time to you know, unionize, if you've got time to rally together and say you want to be let go, well, then you've got too much time on your hands. So now it's your job to gather your own straw in these bricks that you're making. And guess what? You got to make the same amount of bricks. So it becomes harder for them to do their job. That's a clear punishment, right? I mean, that's a clear, you know, this will keep you from having any more of those bright ideas. Kind of like what I do to my kids when they talk about how bored they are. It's like, oh, you're bored? Oh, great, because there's some chores around here that needs to be done. There's some trash that needs to be taken out. There's some baseboards that need to be dusted. There's some bathrooms that need to be cleaned. And then it's incredible how not bored they are just like that. So Pharaoh's trying to do that with the children of Israel. Oh, yeah, you have this bright idea to go away from Egypt. See how you like this. And that's the place. That's the place that the children of Israel are now wanting to appoint a new leader and go back to. Remember also what this Pharaoh had in store for the male children who were born to the children of Israel. What did he have in mind for these male children? Kill them. And here they are saying, yeah. Yeah, we pick that. You know, be careful what is familiar to you, right? The children of Israel here are a wonderful case study of kind of the bias of your comfort zone and an unwillingness to get out of one's comfort zone is proving very, very detrimental to these folks here. Right? This is not the first time they will falsely look fondly back on their time in Egypt. They will, and I'm sure this has to just break God's heart and make him mad all at the same time, you know, because their time in Egypt was terrible. I mean, it's called Egyptian bondage and Egyptian slavery. Because it was no walk in the park for these folks. But when they are facing the unknown or the difficult, it's remarkable how quickly they want to run back to their comfort zone, even though their comfort zone was pretty nasty, right? So it's kind of a side lesson in just kind of the way humans work. Comments, questions on that? Yes, sir, Mr. Bryan, go right ahead.
A couple of comments. What you just said, we're no different than those Israelites. Because we leave the bondage in them, and we leave the nastiness of that kind of life, and we come away from it, and sometimes our walk as Christians can be difficult.
Yeah.
And where do we run back to? Mm-hmm. We run back to the pigsty that we just came out
right.
of.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than walking in the light, walking in the life, maybe a little difficult, but is full of
blessings. Sure.
So we really aren't any different than those.
No. It's a very, very, very common behavior, isn't it? Very common behavior.
And the other comment goes back to Numbers 13.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and read the instructions to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were capable of taking the land or not. It was just a matter of go in and tell us whether,
right.
whether they have strong cities or weak cities, mm-hmm. whether the land is good or not.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically bring back a report. Don't tell us whether we
right.
go in and do it or not.
That right. Don't overthink the matter. And part of showing the children of Israel a heavily fortified land that they were about to take would increase their faith in God, right? Just like when they eventually, 40 plus years later, will take the city of Jericho. I mean, they're taking the city of Jericho should be one of these things like their exodus from Egypt, something that they could never have, you know, figured out a way to get out of Egypt. They could never have figured out a way to take the city of Jericho. But with God's help, they did both. And these should be incredibly helpful to their faith.
And it's odd how it did build their faith. Yeah. But it created tremendous fear to their opponents.
Yeah.
When they take Jericho, it creates tremendous fear moving forward.
It's almost like the people who are not God's people end up having a greater respect for God than God's people. You know, Pharaoh knows what God can do. The children of Israel seem very forgetful about what God can do. Fast forward to Joshua chapter 6. The people in the land of Canaan, they know what God can do. But God's own people, you know, seem to be completely forgetful as to what God can do. Joshua is introduced to us in Numbers chapter 14, verse 6. He tries his hand at encouraging the congregation, but it's just not happening. And God is extremely upset. He declares that none of them will go into the promised land. God, in Numbers chapter 14, verse 22, references that they've put me to the test 10 times and have not obeyed my voice. Don't know if we're literally keeping track of 10 separate instances or if, more likely the case, the number 10 is just used in kind of a everything, totality kind of reference. It's an expression, you know, in our day and time might be the whole nine yards, right? Just kind of covers the idea that completely, totally, thoroughly, these people have put God to the test. God then promises that Joshua and Caleb will go into the promised land, but the rest, they are going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years, Numbers 14:34. Why 40 years? A year for every day they were in the promised land. And this period of wandering in the wilderness would serve what purpose? Why is God sentencing them to this? Right, to kill them off. That's right. That's right. So this generation that has acted defiantly toward God, this generation is going to die off. And that's the book of Numbers. We turn a few pages and we come to the book of Deuteronomy, the fifth of Moses' five books. And we have at the book of Deuteronomy a second generation, a new generation of the children of Israel who are now primed to do what the first generation could not do. And the book of Deuteronomy, I sometimes affectionately refer to it as the book that never should have been written, you know, not in any disrespectful sort of way, but if the children of Israel would have done what God told them to do first, we wouldn't be here in the book of Deuteronomy. But here we are, 40 years later. I mean, this is the most famous kind of going nowhere that happened. I mean, here they were ready to take the promised land. This is a huge stall. God says, oh yeah, you don't want to take the promised land? Well, fine, I'm not going to give it to you. He punishes them. They die, another generation grows up. Brother Mike told us about that 20 years old and an upward threshold. So a second generation, the subsequent generation, is now here. Now they're the men and women of age in Israel. And before they go into the promised land, there will be a pause. The book of Deuteronomy is that pause to give them the law again. The book of Deuteronomy means second law, which is a bit of a misnomer because the law had not changed. God still tells them the same things about marriage. God still tells them the same things about worship. God tells them all of the same things that he had previously explained to them. So it's not a second law. It is a second generation. And coincidentally, I preached on Moses' death Sunday night. And, pardon me, we have that in Numbers chapter 34. Let me hunt me a bottle of water. I think I got one up here. Hope I do. Aha. I kept on magically hoping it would kind of get a little closer to me, but it never did. Sunday night, I preached on Moses' death, recorded Deuteronomy 32, Deuteronomy 34. Moses, as you know, is not one of the ones who is going into the promised land because of a very unfortunate event, a sin. I mean, it's both an unfortunate event and a sin that Moses commits in Numbers chapter 20. Now, our sympathy for Moses in Numbers chapter 20 is even more heightened now that we've spent some time thinking about just the obstinate nature of these children of Israel. For crying out loud, they're wanting to go back to Egypt. And this makes no sense at all. So, on one occasion, Numbers chapter 20, they're whining for water. And, oh, God is not going to give us any water, as if God has forgotten to take care of them or is somehow unable to take care of them. And in an act of frustration, anger, resentment, I mean, Moses and just about everybody else, I mean, they're paying for the sins of those who made the decision not to go into the land. You got Moses, you got Caleb, you got Joshua, who's going to come into the leadership role next here after Deuteronomy. And you've got a lot of innocent people who are walking in a great big old 40-year circle until they pass away. And God completes his punishment. So Moses is, frustrated, right? I get frustrated when I drive to Tennessee and we have to stop for lunch and then stop for gas and then stop for bathroom breaks, you know? Moses, 40 years, was running through his mind, we should have been there by now, and he's mad. And in Numbers chapter 20, he hits the rock instead of speaking to the rock. As I pointed out in Sunday night's sermon, on the spectrum of things you could do against God, it seems kind of small. I mean, Moses didn't curse God. Moses didn't say, hey, guess what, y'all? Let's start worshiping these statues. Moses didn't do that. He just kind of, missed a detail. But that's not the way God saw it. God said to Moses, "You broke faith with me." We're seeing, if we haven't already seen it, we're seeing that God means business. In the garden, God gave Adam and Eve a law, and it had to be kept. And Adam and Eve both decided, "We don't want to keep this law." And God said, "Well, that's still the law." At no point did God say, "Well, whoa, 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 maybe I need to change, you know? What do you want? Tell me a kind of church that you like. Tell me a kind of God that you want me to be, and we'll work something out." Genesis chapter 6, you have a whole world, which we discussed, maybe numbering in a million-ish, a lot of folks. And most of them were against God, Genesis chapter 6. And at no point did God say, "What am I doing wrong? People aren't responding to me. People are leaving. What am I doing wrong?" That's not what God said. Genesis chapter 6, all of the people were against God. And God said, "Well, you still have to do it anyway." We see that with their denial from entrance into the promised land. Here are the people wanting God to change, God to not be so strict, God to not be so rulesy. And every opportunity, God has to enforce his rules, he does. It's maybe from this that some people get the flawed idea that, well, that's the God of the Old Testament. You know, the God of the New Testament, so much nicer and better and kinder and gentler. Well, this is a kind and gentle God. We mentioned Genesis chapter 6. And let it be reminded that it was grace that saved the day in Genesis chapter 6. God, the God of the Old Testament, is a very loving and gracious God. He demands obedience. The God of the New Testament, check this out, is a very loving, gracious God. He demands obedience. And these people have not obeyed him, including Moses. Sam, I saw your hand a second ago. Go right ahead.
When I look at the rock, you should have started with 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 22 verses.
Gotcha.
And it says that rock that was the children of Israel.
Yeah.
Well, in Exodus 17,
Right. Yes. Right. That's a connection that has been made. Yeah, it's a big deal to God, for sure. For sure. Yes, sir, Mr. Mack. Yes. Right.
So many times people get mad at Bible class.
Oh, yeah.
Or elders, whomever. And as long as we're doing what God has said, they're not getting mad at me. They're rejecting God.
Excellent point. One that I failed to call attention to from Numbers 14:9. Moses is trying to talk some sense into the people. And even though Moses himself is kind of in the hot seat as Israel's leader at this time, I mean, they're talking about choosing a new leader and going back to Egypt. Moses says, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. Y'all need to keep me as your leader." Moses doesn't do that. Moses says, "Do not rebel against the Lord." So, point well taken. Moses dies. And, wow. This is about the year 1405. Joshua, whom we've already met, takes over. And in Joshua chapter 1, Joshua is given a huge pep talk by God. And in Joshua chapter 6, the children of Israel take the famous city of Jericho, and they are off and running in the promised land. And we are in about the year 1400 BC. And I think things have already been extremely exciting and fascinating for the children of Israel, but things are going to become even more fascinating as they take the promised land. We're going to see next week Israel's yearning for a king so they can be like everybody else. All right, y'all, we will stop there. Thanks so much for being here and participating tonight.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.